As many of you know, I spent a number of years in the Royal Navy, and the last ship that I was on was a guided missile destroyer called HMS Corunna. Basically, the battle-class destroyers were made about 1943-1944 for the close of the Second World War, and in addition to having anti-submarine equipment on board, they also carried three gun turrets, two forward and one aft. Well, the Corunna had had the after gun turret removed, and it was replaced by a quadruple SeaCat anti-aircraft missile launcher. Now, these anti-aircraft missiles, the SeaCats, were very, very effective. You could fire them, and providing the inboard radar only found an echo that was above you, you were safe. If it could only find one beneath it, namely HMS Corunna, you had trouble. And there were a number of scares which the gunnery officer only admitted to a number of days later. But you know, they did have some foresight. They did put an inboard self-destruct on the SeaCat missiles so that if anything did go wrong from the launcher, you could press a button and hopefully the SeaCat missile would destroy itself before it actually hit the Corunna. And it's because the Corunna had this marvellous piece of equipment on board that she was assigned the task of joining the escort vessels to take the aircraft carrier HMS Ark Royal through the Mediterranean for her to take up her duties on the Far East Station. I believe she was going out to Singapore, but it could have been Hong Kong. But anyway, she was going out to the Pacific area, and the flotilla of ships sailed from Portsmouth down the English Channel, round the Iberian Peninsula, and then into the Mediterranean through the Straits of Gibraltar. From there, we went straight to Port Said, and in 1962, that particular time, we were the first littoral ships from the Royal Navy to actually go down the Suez Canal since the 1956 Suez Crisis. So it was a bit of a first for the Royal Navy. The previous ships that had gone down there had gone down at 40 knots, dropping mines all the way, and that was HMS Manxman. But anyway, we were the first ships down there. We took the Ark Royal through the Suez Canal. An interesting thing about the Suez Canal, for those of you who know anything about geography, the Suez Canal is something like 150 miles long, from memory. And the sea at the southern end at Port Suez is approximately 100 feet higher than the sea level at Port Said. There are no locks along the whole distance of the Suez Canal. And I say it's approximately 100 feet different. It just depends whether the tide is in or out at Port Suez. But because the Earth revolves at a given speed, it's 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, the sea level at the southern end of the Suez Canal is 100 feet higher. But it's one of those funny little things. Anyway, we traversed the Suez Canal and we entered into the Gulf of Suez. Now, as you go down the waterway, the distance between the shores gradually increases until, you know, you can be out in the middle of the Gulf and you can only just see the two sides of the Gulf itself. And as you go down, you see these beautiful hues of purple and grey hills, and they look pretty steep at times, and you're too far out at sea to see whether there are any beaches there. But all you can see is this line of hills from both sides coming closer to the edge of the water until it looks as if the cliffs are actually going down to the water's edge. And as we were going down there, some people on board the Corunna and other ships were wondering about things that happened 3,500 years before, when God miraculously opened up the water of the Red Sea, whether it's the Red Sea in the Gulf there, or whether it's the Red Sea further south, we don't know. But as we went down there, some people actually wondered whether we had actually passed over the spot where the Israelites crossed the sea. And, you know, we got down there, and it was quite awe-inspiring to see the distance that had to be traversed in going across that waterway. And you think about it, the Gulf of Suez, together with the Red Sea proper, is part of the Great Rift Valley, which goes down the middle of Africa and then up into the area between Jordan and Israel. So, you know, it's a long stretch. And the water in the middle of the Gulf there, and in the middle of the Red Sea, is very, very deep. And you think 200 feet of water is enough depth of water to actually crush anybody who's on the seabed. So, you know, while the Israelites went through the Red Sea on dry land, when the waters came together, 200 feet of water on top of you would knock the breath out of you, literally, and you'd be literally flattened by the pressure of water from the outside. Now, my purpose today on this, the last day of unleavened bread, is to show us that this is a joyful day of thankfulness and jubilation, remembering the key to our deliverance so that we will not be enslaved by sin again. Because these days picture our coming out of sin. I'd like you to turn with me, please, to Exodus chapter 14 and verse 1. Here, God gave the Israelites their marching orders. They had to go to a specific place on the coast of Egypt, and there God would show his might to the Egyptians. And here in Exodus chapter 14 and verse 1, we'll read this account. Beginning in verse 1. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal-zephon. Before it you shall encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say that the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. Now, physically, the children of Israel, 3,500 years ago, had no place to go. They had the sea in front of them. They had the mountains to the south of them. They had the wilderness around them, and the Egyptian army all around them at the back. Only a miracle could save them from either annihilation or a long walk back to their slave labour camps that they had only enjoyed a few days previously. We all know what happened next. God miraculously opened the sea in front of the Israelites, and then the ground was dry. When the ground was dry, they just walked across the seabed, and they had a dry road right the way across. Now, some of you may have seen the film The Ten Commandments, and that was a pretty impressive scene where Charlton Heston led the Israelites across the sea on dry land. You know, seeing the water opening up the way it did, and you just think, you know, that was impressive. What must it have been like when God actually did the real thing? I mean, you know, what man can do is peanuts compared to what God does. And, you know, it really, really must have been something tremendously impressive. Now, I'd like to drop down to verse 27 of Exodus 14. Now, these former slaves crossed the sea shore on the eastern side of the Red Sea, and they saw that the Egyptian army was in hot pursuit. Indeed, some of them must have been aware that the Egyptian army was only a few hundred yards behind them. And God had the answer to it. And in verse 27, we read the following. And the Eternal said unto Moses, Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon the chariots, upon the horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength. When the morning appeared, the Egyptians fled against it, and the Eternal overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh and came into the sea after them. There he made not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Eternal saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw the great work which the Eternal did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Eternal, and believed that the Lord, that the Eternal, and his servant Moses. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel a song unto the Eternal, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Eternal, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Eternal is my strength and song, and he is become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him a habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him. Now, from the area the Israelites were encamped across the waterway on to the other side would have required negotiating a sea which, as I said before, was probably about 200 feet deep, possibly more, because there are great crevices along the bed of the Gulf of Suez and the Red Sea. Now, when the Israelites saw their deliverance, they were overjoyed, and in their jubilation they did give thanks to God. In some ways it was an offering of thankfulness. Now, 35 centuries later, after our forefathers were delivered from the bondage, on that day, tradition has it that the Israelites were delivered from their foes on this day, the last day of unleavened bread. Now, we also are being delivered from sin, and we have this opportunity now. Putting sin out of our lives over the last 7 days is not just a 7-day occurrence, it's a lifetime occurrence. And putting sin out of our lives, replacing it with God's unleavened way of life, is what we have to do. And I'd like you to turn with me now, please, to Isaiah chapter 46 and verse 10. We are gathered together here on this, the last day of unleavened bread, to give thanks to our great God, who created and controls the unlimited universe. Now, he has decided that at this time there will be a group of people who have come out of sin. He has predestinated a group of people. And he has said that what he says will stand. And here in chapter 46 of Isaiah, verse 10, we read the following. Well, let's start in verse 9. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do my pleasure. This great God who delivered Israel from their Egyptian bondage will also deliver repentant sinners from the penalty of their sins. And that includes us all, particularly if we are repentant. So long as we have that repentant attitude, we can count on being delivered. So we should show our thanks before God, and in accordance with his commandment, appear here before him to rejoice and give thanks to the Eternal, because this is a special day, the day which he delivered Israel of old, and a time when he says he will deliver us all.